This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. It's not every day that a scientific study reads like a work of literature, but here's how a recent paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences began. Quote, "It is a truth universally acknowledged that a pair of grape hemispheres exposed to intense microwave radiation will spark, igniting a plasma." That's right. Cut a grape in half, put the pieces next to each other in the microwave, and voila, sparks and maybe even a glowing cloud of plasma. You can find videos and explainers online, but there's never been a solid scientific explanation for the phenomenon until now. Aaron Slepkov is Associate Professor and Canada Research Chair in the Physics of Biomaterials at Trent University and senior author on a new study explaining why microwaved grapes produce plasma. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on, Heather.
I understand this microwaving grapes trick has been around for a couple of decades. You can find YouTube videos going all the way back to the beginnings of YouTube. But I'm, for one, just finding out about it. And I did it for the first time a few days ago. And it was pretty spectacular. I mean, you put the grapes in there next to each other, the grape halves, couple of seconds, there's a few sparks. And then there was actually this like cloud, almost like a cloud of sparks above the grapes. Pretty big, too. I mean, what are we actually looking at there?
Well, there's two parts to it. The most impressive part that everybody's interested in at home is the big, you know, cloud of plasma that you mentioned. But once you have a spark in a microwave, often that spark will grow into a much bigger plasma because any plasma, any charged ions or electrons are actually resonant with the microwave radiation themselves. So they feed on microwave radiation. So once you get a spark, it often will grow into a big, you know, ball lightning. So that's the impressive second part. We are very happy to have found out why the sparking happens to begin with. And that's been the crux of our research, is explaining why the microwaves will create a spark from a pair of grapes.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, you did this work because there were some explanations online that you didn't really think held water. What was missing from what people said was going on in this little parlor trick?
So for decades, I think it was assumed that when you cut the grape in half and you leave this little connecting bridge of skin, that the bridge of skin acts as a conductor, as a conducting channel, almost like a piece of metal. And so that the balls of the grapes are acting as an antenna. And that did make sense to us. We were just curious about why that's the only geometry that anybody's ever found before. So we went exploring this, and much to our surprise, we found that you don't need the skin of bridge. You can do this with two whole grapes as long as they're very close to each other or touching. And then later, you were right in terms of not holding water. We started thinking as physicists, and as physicists, we always strip things down to their most fundamental basics. And we thought, well, maybe a grape isn't a grape. Maybe a grape to microwave oven is just a ball of water. And so we started studying hydrogel spheres, water beads that are more than 98% water. And we realized that water is a very special material at microwave frequencies. It has what's known as an index of refraction that's very, very large. It's an index of refraction around 10, which is much larger than most materials. And what this means is that the grapes can, or any balls of water, can pack microwave radiation really tightly. They can trap the light inside of them. And so the breakthrough for us was seeing that this is actually about photonics. This is about optics of microwave light as it interacts with geometries of water, rather than about conductive channels in metallic-like objects or conducting grapes.
Okay, so walk me through this. You've got either two grapes or two halves of grapes sitting next to each other in the microwave. In either case, you've got some grape skin touching. You turn on the microwave, they get bombarded with microwaves, and the microwaves just get trapped inside the grapes? That's what you're saying?
So when we have individual spheres, the microwave radiation packs in an interesting way such that it's hottest right, or more concentrated right in the center rather than more concentrated around the outside. So that was interesting to us from an optical resonance standpoint, but that doesn't explain the phenomenon. The interesting thing is that when you take two spheres and you bring them closer and closer together, the packed light inside of each sphere can sense the other sphere in a sense, and they move towards the point of contact. So by the time that they're touching, almost all of the light is concentrated, almost like as if these were two tiny lenses. They're centimeter size, but microwave radiation is about 12 centimeters. So these look like tiny lenses to the microwave, but they concentrate all of the electric field right at the point of contact. And that's right near the surface where there's lots of sodium and potassium ions in the grapes. And so there's enough intensity of the electric field there to rip off some electrons and to create a plasma.
And if you look at some of your videos that you've taken or, you know, kind of slow it down, you can actually see the grapes or the grape halves kind of bouncing against each other as this is happening. They're actually moving.
Yes, that was that's something that we did not address in this paper, but that's definitely the avenue of research that we're following up on. We're submitting another paper very shortly about that motion. Somehow there's an exchange of energy from the microwave radiation into some kind of mechanical motion of the vibration. And that's probably has to do with the fact that as the plasma is created, or just before the plasma is created, the temperature is so hot near the surface that it's ejecting violently water vapor, and it's creating a little pressure, a little mini explosion that bounces these apart. And when you watch the videos, you see the plasma goes away when they bounce apart, and then they need to come back together so that you can have this interaction between the two resonators for the spark to happen again. They need to be almost touching or touching for this to happen.
That is really interesting. Would this work? You mentioned that, you know, you have to have two bodies in order for them to kind of sense each other. Would it work with three or four, or is this really specific to just having two?
No, it does work with many others. We haven't investigated fully all of the geometries that work, but if you took, let's say, four grapes, you cut each of them in half, leaving a little skin bridge, you put all eight halves in a row, you're going to get a little xylophone of sparking happening at different locations at different times.
Okay, that I am definitely going to have to try. But what is it about grapes specifically? Is it just their size? I mean, would this work maybe with pitted cherries that are about the same size? Or is there something specific about grapes?
As we found, the most interesting aspect of this is that basically grapes are balls of water. So anything of about the right size, I would say something between 1 centimeter and 2 centimeters in diameter, and it's made of mostly water, will work. We've done this with blueberries. We've done this with cherries. We've done this with olives. Pitted or unpitted, it seems to work because mostly they are balls of water.
Okay, this just gets better and better. I'm talking with physicist Aaron Slepkov of Trent University about recent research on how grapes in a microwave create plasma. You already mentioned that you're following up on this, looking at how the microwave energy creates motion, which you hadn't expected to see. This whole project, I'm wondering, how did this get started? This isn't normally the kind of research that happens in your lab.
You're absolutely correct. We have an ultra-fast laser lab. We do biophotonics in the lab, mostly microscopy. We have a good amount of funding for that research. We certainly hadn't previously sought funding for the grape balls of fire research. It was just a collection of undergraduate students who were interested in doing some science, and who there was just no room in the laser lab to have them work. So we gave them this project to play around with, some curiosity-based science, not really knowing if it would go anywhere, but even if we could add something to all of the YouTube interest, we thought it would be worthwhile. And every summer that we worked on this with new undergraduate students, we discovered more and more and more. And at some point, we realized that we probably know the most about this in the world. We've identified certain physics principles that we didn't expect. So then the study turned fairly serious. We started really rigorously trying to do what all scientists should do, and that's disprove our own theories. For example, to disprove that this had to do with surface conductivity, we did this with quail eggs. We put two quail eggs next to each other. They're about the right size. They're a little big, but they're fairly small. And we didn't make plasma with them, but we had a way to see if there was a hot spot between them, and there was. And then we stuck a needle in each and took out all of the innards, and we did the experiment again, and the hot spot went away because there's no water inside anymore. And then we refilled them with water and the hotspot came back together. So that was just one way in which we really tried to rigorously disprove the original thought that this had to do with some kind of surface conductivities or ions moving back and forth. And that's just an example of, you know, both serious attention that we pay to it, but also kind of whimsical, because when you get to put quail eggs in a paper, you know you've done something right.
Grapes and blueberries and quail eggs. I mean, and olives. You've maybe got a whole recipe in there somewhere. I have to say, on your website, you mentioned that this was curiosity driven, and you say most of your research is really curiosity driven. And then you kind of put your research into three categories. You've already mentioned the microscopy, that this definitely was not. But then you say there's physics education research, and then just mad science. Where does grapes in the microwave fall in those categories?
For a long time, that was the mad science that we were doing. We've done some other kind of mad science or mad exploration, where we once tested a theory that we could use something known as Benford's Law. It's a statistical quirk to see if we could attack multiple choice test banks, for example. So that was part of our education research, but also a little bit of madness. And we published that a few years ago to a little bit of media attention. And so that's the kind of mad science. Just whatever sparks our interest, we try to follow.
You on your CV have an appendix after pages of listing all of your successes, all of your research, your presentations on microscopy and on multiple choice testing, and presumably now you'll be adding grapes in the microwave. And then you've got this appendix that is your CV of failures, all of the papers that haven't been published, the grants that haven't been funded, for that matter, the jobs you've applied for and haven't gotten. Why do you put that there?
Well, that's a good question. You don't see CV of failures very often, but I've been keeping abreast on the internet about various academic matters, you know, the life of academics. And some senior academics have pointed out that junior professors have a sense that the successful senior academics, it's been all roses and all success. And what they don't realize is that for every grant that we get, there's many more that we don't get sometimes. And for every paper that's published, that paper might have had a very arduous path to publication. And so I saw some people putting these CVs of failures up, and I thought, you know what? It's not that I owe it to other people, but that it makes sense to also show how much work we do that never gets to see the light of day. So I started putting the CV of failures, and right now at the top of my CV of failures is this paper where it was desk rejected from four journals before it was published in PNAS. There were four journals that we thought would really like to see this, and you know, they basically wouldn't even send it to review. They didn't think it was interesting, and that certainly felt like failure at the time, but we kept going, and eventually it got published in PNAS, and now I'm talking to you about this. But when a junior scientist sees my CV, they might not appreciate the fact that there's a lot of failures, and that they're part of our curriculum vitae, our way of life as academics. So that's why I've put it up there.
Well, I hope you will take it as a compliment if we call you a mad scientist. Aaron Slepkov is Associate Professor and Canada Research Chair in the Physics of Biomaterials at Trent University, and senior author on a new study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences explaining why microwaved grapes produce plasma. Aaron, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.